Tonight we're doing a topic. I'm not really sure if it's a 45-minute worth topic, but we'll see what we can find. This is made it to my 10-minute halacha list in yeshiva. I keep a list on my shtender where guys put in suggested topics for 10-minute halacha shir, and it resonated with me because in yeshiva I noticed that in the Rebbe's bathroom, separate bathroom for Rebbe's. In the Rebbe's bathroom, there are two sinks, one that has a washing cup in it, one that does not have a washing cup in it, and I'm never sure. Like, am I supposed to use the washing cup? And you know, it's not that there are additional water fountains and sinks outside, but the sink that people use after going to the bathroom, there's a washing cup. One of the things I was never sure, like, if someone else is there at the same time, like, am I doing something that's not religious if I don't use the washing cup? Like, I'm never sure what the appropriate, you know, just trying to fit in, you know, a new place. So I was never sure what the appropriate behavior is. So I figure it's kedai to look into. It's worth discovering whether how one is supposed to wash their hands when they leave the bathroom. So in general, we have a lot of hand washing in Judaism. That's why people who are OCD tend to gravitate toward halacha as the expression of their OCD, because, like, it fits. You know, if you read the biography of the Satmar Rebbe, like, you know, as a child, he clearly had a lot of OCD, and it expressed itself in tremendous religious fervor, in tremendous, and, you know, staying in the bathroom forever and ever, and cleaning the hands over and over and over and over again. So there's a lot of different halachas of hand washing. The difficulty is, if it was one halacha of netilas yadayim for X, that you have to do netilas yadayim because of this issue, so then we would just learn the halachas of that netilas yadayim and we'd be done. But it seems that there are so many different nuanced reasons why a Jew would be washing his hands. We wash our hands when we wake up in the morning. We also wash our hands before we eat bread. Do those have anything to do with each other? Does washing hands before you leave the bathroom, is that a religious thing? Or is that's the title, cleanliness or godliness, right? Is that a religious thing, or is that just because it's disgusting not to wash your hands after you leave the bathroom? And what are the nafkaminas? So, you know, when I first wrote up this outline this morning, I thought of four possible reasons why one would wash their hands. And then I saw afterwards in the Piskei Tshuvas, in the Siman about Netilas Yadayim, Siman Dalid, he also starts off by saying that there are four reasons to wash your hands. There are four mechayvim of a person to wash their hands, but it's not the same four that I have. So maybe I'm wrong about this. The four that I have are cleanliness, meaning one just might wash their hands because you just want to be clean, because a person is supposed to be clean and is supposed to be healthy, so you wash your hands when you leave the bathroom. If that were the case, the pouring over with a washing cup is not the most effective way. The most effective way would be scrubbing with a little bit of soap, probably, and that would be the best thing to do. But then there's also a concept of tumas hayadayim, and sometimes we wash because of tumas hayadayim. Now, what does that mean, tumas hayadayim? On a d'oraisa level, there's no such concept. On a d'oraisa level, a person is either tamei or he's tahar. There's no such thing as his hands are tamei, but the rest of his body is tahar. That is a din midrabanan, but there's a whole masechta, masechas yadayim. There's a whole Torah about this issue of tumas hayadayim, this din d'rabanan, that our hands can become tamei. And that's why we have to wash our hands for truma. In the days when a kohen would eat truma, you have to wash before eating truma. Our washing for bread is a remnant of that. We wash our hands before we eat bread, because of tumas hayadayim, similar to washing for truma. Now, once you're washing to remove truma, it makes a little more sense that there should be some ritual of how to do it, that it's not just scrubbing off the truma. You don't see truma. In fact, the Gemara points out that they had to make a gezeira that one should not bathe after using a mikvah. One should not bathe immediately after using a mikvah. It's nisa drabanan to bathe immediately after using a mikvah, because people so often translate tuma as uncleanliness and think of tahara as cleanliness. That what are you going to see? You're going to see a person, let's say yourself, you're not seeing anybody else, you see yourself going into this filthy, disgusting mikvah, let's say, and then you come out and you shower afterwards and you clean yourself off and you're perfectly clean after the shower. And you take a step back and you think, which of these things just cleaned me? Which of these things left me as, you know, as tahar, as pure and as clean and as pristine? You're clearly going to think it's the shower you took afterwards and it's not the mikvah. So because of a gezeira that people are going to think, lo elu mitaharim, ela elu mitaharim, that it wasn't the mikvah waters that were mitaharim me, it's these other waters that are mitaharim me. So because of that, they had to make a gezeira, no bathing right after the mikvah. The halacha is, it's still halacha lemaisa, we bathe before going to the mikvah, but not after. A woman who goes to the mikvah doesn't bathe immediately after the mikvah till after the bia rishona that night, the bia that she has that night. Then she can bathe afterwards. But there's got to be some maisa, something that happens between going to the mikvah and the next bath. So there is a concept of so the point I'm trying to get to is, when we're talking about removing tumah, it's not the same as cleaning oneself. It's got to be that there's some ritual element of it. There's some how-to. You know, a mikvah removes tumah, but a mikvah doesn't have to be clean. I mean, it's best if it is. It's most inviting if it is, but it doesn't have to be clean in order to be able to remove the tumah. So you would imagine that's where maybe how many times you wash might matter. That's where if you use a kli or not use a kli, where that might matter. Then there's a related concept, but it's different, called Ruach Ra. Ruach Ra is not Tumah. Ruach Ra is some sort of, and you know, how this gets translated by contemporary thinking is, you know, the basis of some dispute, whether, you know, Ruach Ra, some, I think Rav Aaron Soloveitchik thought that it related to bacteria, to things that you can't see. So in dirty places, there's a greater sense of Ruach Ra. But whatever it is, it's more than uncleanliness. It's some sort of negative spiritual force that's not quite tumah that comes on a person's hands. And therefore, it also requires netilah. Certain places are considered to be so disgusting that even if your hands don't touch anything in those places, there is a ruach ra that comes on a person's hands. A person goes to sleep at night. So since sleep is 1/60th of death, and whatever it means, whatever's happening with his neshama, overnight, something's happening with his hands. And there's a ruach ra that the Rishonim talk about that's shara al yadayim, that's on the hands. To complicate it further, ruach ra has different levels. It depends how potent that particular ruach ra that you're concerned about might be. The Torah writes that you wake up in the morning, you wash your hands three times, because it's a very potent ruach ra that you wake up with. But that doesn't mean that every ruach ra would demand that you wash your hands three times. Just that ruach ra demands you wash your hands three times. Beis Yosef quotes to use a kli for netilas yadayim, but maybe that's only that particularly potent ruach ra. So in the morning, certainly, we were all trained from a very young age to wash three times with a kli. But does that mean every time there's ruach ra, we have to wash three times with a kli? That's going to come into play, certainly, in this topic of washing after coming to the bathroom. And then there's a fourth type of washing hands. In the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim would wash their hands and feet sometimes by the kiyar, and it was a preparation for the coming avoda. A person is about to do something that has a certain level of holiness, a certain level of spirituality. As a preparation, one washes their hands. Why? Are your hands dirty? No. Are your hands tameh? No. But just as a preparation, to show that you're taking it seriously. So washing before davening might be a carryover for that idea. Washing as preparation to say things of Kedusha. Now, this may play a role in, you know, what we're essentially going to have to go through is, okay, we wash our hands when we leave the bathroom. Why do we wash our hands when we leave the bathroom? Which of these four is the reason, and is it more than one? Well, I'm pretty sure the first one, pretty sure for cleanliness, like that's pretty big, right? I'm pretty sure we do it for that. But if that's the case, there are no rules, it's just get as clean as you can. Is there tumas hayadayim in the bathroom? Probably not. What would be metame the yadayim? There's no tumah. It's unclean, but it's not tame. Removal of ruach ra. Well, certain places that are considered to be very dirty, where there are negative spiritual forces around. You know, the Gemara talks about all sorts of shadim in the bathroom. These kinds of things. So it would seem to lend itself to some sort of ruach ra. But we don't know. It's a very nebulous concept, very difficult to really wrap our minds around what exactly Ruach Ra is. I shouldn't make that assumption for everyone here. For me, it's very difficult to understand what exactly the term means. And washing is preparation for a holy activity. Does that apply when we go to the bathroom? I guess it depends where you go next, right? But we do know what we're doing next, right after we leave the bathroom. So automatically, the very first thing we do as soon as we leave is a bracha v'asher yatzar. So there is a particular holy activity that we're going to be engaged in immediately after a person leaves the bathroom. So maybe the washing relates to the asher yatzar on some level. So that's what we have to... Now, when I looked in the Piskei Tshuva, as I mentioned before, he's also got four different categories, but they're not my categories. He has a first category he has is Ruach Ra'a, and he says, this means your hands are perfectly clean, but you just woke up in the morning. Or you just left the bathroom, even if you didn't go to the bathroom, even if you didn't use the facilities. I should have mentioned that, right? That would be a huge nafkamina. If it's about your hands being dirty, if you just walked into the bathroom and walked out, so then there would be no need to wash your hands. But if it's about the ruach ra of the place, that this room has some sort of intense ruach ra, then just being there might cause the ruach ra. A side conversation, a side topic that should be discussed in this context, but we're not going to discuss in detail, is are our bathrooms really bathrooms? Meaning the rooms that they were talking about, these were not, with marble tiles and, you could, in the way that our bathrooms are kept in most of our homes, like, you could eat off the floor. I mean, you wouldn't, but you could. It's very often the most expensive and nicest room in the house, whether that's a reflection of how much time is spent in there or not. But it's and also, they're multi-purpose rooms, meaning they're not just used for relieving oneself. They're used for washing up, for brushing the teeth, for a woman putting on makeup, for a place where you store all your medications, they have medicine cabinets in all the bathrooms. So a shower, so you have, it's a multi-purpose room on some level. And also, just the miracles of modern plumbing are such that there is no tsoa that stays in the room unless your toilet is backed up. Generally speaking, if everything's operating the way it should, there's nothing that actually stays in the room. So, the discussion poskim have is there's something called beis kisei de parsoi, the Gemara talks about, where the parsoi people are the first ones to think of the idea. That doesn't take a genius, I don't think. But the first one is to think of the idea of the old train bathrooms where it would just land on the tracks, it would just go right through and it would just tumble right out, and therefore it wouldn't stay in that location.
Washing
for a motzi would be another significant nafkamina, because if you say that our bathroom is not really a bathroom, then why not, right? But if our, would you say the bracha? Right, so... But why not? Meaning, if our bathroom is not a bathroom, then why not, right? Would you eat in the bathroom? You can't eat in a place that has ruach ra. I don't know if I should. A grandson of a famous gadol b'Yisrael who may or may not daven in our shul told me once that he once asked his grandfather if he's allowed to eat in the bathroom. Now, when I was a kid, you were not allowed to eat in the bathroom. You were not allowed to bring food in the bathroom. If you had to go get something from the bathroom, you'd leave your sandwich in your hand outside as you have to reach in to get something from the medicine cabinet or something. And he says that his grandfather said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. And he said, what do you mean there's nothing wrong? He said, you shouldn't sit on the toilet with a sandwich, but there's nothing wrong with the food that went into the bathroom. I mean, he was obviously assuming this conversation is how he remembers it, he was obviously assuming that our bathrooms aren't really bathrooms. One of the rebbeim in DRS came over to me the other day, and he said, what's the story with our modern bathroom? He says, I can't imagine. So what do the poskim say? The beis kisei de parsoi, so we're very makelon. That's not really a bathroom, because it's so it doesn't stay there. So some of the poskim say, yeah, but our bathrooms, it doesn't automatically go away. You have to flush first for it to go away. So our bathrooms are worse than beis kisei de parsoi. I mean, but come on, really? Is it possible that our bathrooms are going to be worse than beis kisei de parsoi? I don't know what they looked like for sure, but I'm pretty sure they didn't look like a fill in the blank how many thousands of dollars it costs to make a beautiful bathroom like you see nowadays. So that is an important topic. We're not exactly going to get into that, but it's certainly a factor in terms of how we view these halachos. Meaning if we have a case where we're not sure, would you wash, would you not wash, we'll certainly take that into account as a major factor.
Does order play a role in the whole thing, like bad order?
So bad odor plays a role. It may play a role in Ruach Ra, I don't know. It certainly plays a role in terms of bracha.
Like a safeguard, like you could probably do, maybe make a ruach in the bathroom, but because it's a place where there's bad odors there, maybe you shouldn't.
Right, there are a number of halachas. I mean, you're not allowed to have a shul that borders on a bathroom. That's why I was just looking for the bathroom. You're not allowed to have a shul that borders on a bathroom. Yeah. So Shlomo Zalman says, yeah, you can. Nowadays you can. Because we're not talking about the same thing. What?
I was wondering.
Right, so we're not talking about... No, certainly the door shouldn't be open, obviously. No, it's not. but when you're davening, when I once asked Rav Shechter, my father-in-law was sitting Shiva many years ago, this must go back, I married almost 18 years, this is right before I got married, 19 years. So I asked Rav Shechter, are there things in a... I want to impress the new father, the future father-in-law, that I know what I'm talking about. So I said, in a Beis Avil, are there things that, people maybe don't know that, I didn't say that I could impress my father-in-law with, but I said that, maybe people should know in a Beis Avil that often people don't do right. So he said, very often, they're davening in the Beis Avil, but it's not really set up for davening. So there are various halachos of a room set up for tefillah that maybe aren't being observed. For example, you need a minyan of people in a single room. You can't have 8 people in one room and 5 people in the other room. Now, if you have a minyan in one room, then a few people in the other room who can see it can still be mitzdareif, but you need a minyan of people. He said sometimes it's just set up in a way where it's a tiny room that has the Aron Kodesh in it that's off to the side. So, a few people are there and a few people are there. And that notion of just a home not being really set up to be a place to daven, that I've been in many house minyanim where homes aren't set up where the bathroom has to be a hallway removed from the room that you're in. It's very often, it's just you're in a room where there's a door that opens right into a bathroom, maybe open, maybe closed. That is, you're not supposed to daven like that. If the door is closed, Rav Shlomo Zalman is makel, if it doesn't smell and the door is closed, then does. But he said if there's a wall of urinals, that should not be the other side of the wall of the shul. Meaning that's just a terrible bizayon that you're going to have that as the other side of the wall of the shul. Okay, so his first category is Ruach Ra'ah. Very interesting. He automatically assumes that Ruach Ra'ah applies in a bathroom. Why does he assume that? So we'll see why in a moment. His second category is Ruach Ra'ah Sheyesh Ba Gam Mishum Tuma. So he doesn't just say Tuma. I don't know why. He says a Ruach Ra'ah that's also Tuma related. For example, he says, after Tashmish Amita, one is supposed to wash their hands. Nogeya Bimeis, someone touches a dead body. If we go to a funeral, we go to a cemetery. So before we leave, we wash our hands. That is some type of tumah-related ruach ra'ah. Holich ben emesim besak baros. His third category, yadav mitunafos mizuama shel zeya tzawa uchadoma. Your hands are sweaty and gross. Or have some impurity, physical impurity on them. For example, you touched your shoes, you touched your feet, you scratched your head, you killed the bug with your hands, something like that. So are your hands filthy? No. But there's some, something that's on your hands. It always bothered me because, take any of those examples. Touching your shoes. When you're walking on paved streets and carpets indoors and marble floors indoors, is touching your shoes really making your hands dirty? Very often, it's not at all. Your hands are no more dirty when they touch your shoes than they are when they touch any other article of clothing on your body. Or even chofef rosho, when you scratch your head. How filthy and oily and gross and sweaty are your hands after you scratch your head? Well, when was the last time you showered? I mean, how much have you been sweating? If you've been sitting in a central air-conditioned room all day and you showered that morning, you're probably not so bad, right? When chofef rosho. So these categories are very difficult to put into contemporary times. His fourth category is just... mamish filthy hands. Yadav muchachos mirefes fitit. You have mud or whatever, something gross on your hands where you need to actually remove. And he talks about that. A person picks his nose or his ears or whatever. Okay, fine. So he's got something gross on his hands. So he needs to get it to remove them from his hands. So those are the four categories he has. Let's work with my four categories because I don't know. I'm not really sure why he assumes that. So where does it ever come up that a person has to wash after going to the bathroom? The first source that I'm aware of is a Mishnah in Maseches Yuma. The Mishnah Maseches Yuma describes how the Kohen Gadol acted on Yom Kippur, what his schedule was on Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah describes in source number 2, in Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph, Horidu Kohen Gadol Beis HaTevilah. They would send him to the Beis HaTevilah. Zeh HaKlal Haya B'Migdash. But here's a general rule of how things worked in the Migdash. Kala Mesa Chesraglav Ta'un Tevilah. If a Kohen had defecated, he needs a Tevilah after that. V'kala Matil Mayim Ta'un Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim. And if he's Matil Mayim, if he urinated, he needs Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim. He needs to wash his hands and his feet. So there we have it. There we have actual washing after going to the bathroom. But that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with our washing after going to the bathroom. What's entirely different about that context than our context is that he has where to go right afterwards. He's about to go back to do the avoda. So maybe to transition from one to the other, there needs to be some mikveh tahara between the experience of using the restroom and the experience of being oved in the Beis HaMikdash. It's you need some transitional thing. You can't just go directly from one to the other. Remember, there used to be a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Still is. It's a phenomenal Rosh Yeshiva. Guys, some of the very strong guys who had learned in YU, when they graduated, wanted to go learn in his yeshiva, but he demanded a mikveh tahara first. He demanded that he go learn in the mir for 6 months first, because he can't come. He can't come straight from one to the other. So some guy, if you're the guy that wanted to go learn in his yeshiva, you understood. Like you thought, yeah, good. Okay. So anyway, the transition is necessary. And in fact, the Gemara is pretty explicit about it. The Gemara, a daf later, in Daf Chav Tes and Beis, Zeh Klal Hayu B'Migdash. Bishlam Raglai Mishum Nitzotzo. So we said the Klal of the Mishnah, so the Gemara discusses. Bishlam Raglai Mishum Nitzotzos. I understand why you have to wash your feet after urinating, because there may be urine on your feet. Eliyadayim my time. Why do you have to wash your hands? Amrabiyav is Zosamar's mitzvah l'shav shev. It is a mitzvah to clean off whatever is on your hands. And the implication is that you need to do it in order to prepare yourself to then go to in order to clean yourself off. Meaning the purpose of this is not some tahara, some ruach ra. It's the Gemara is discussing practically what's on your hands. Why are you washing them? And the Gemara has to answer that question. The very fact that the Gemara is asking that question is assuming that you're washing them because there's something on them, because there's some physical problem, not some spiritual issue. The Tosis Yishadim on the spot, quotes from Rabbeinu Tam, Amar Rabbeinu Tam, source number 4, Ki mikan yeshlomo she'nichnas asher mayim ein tzarech litol yadav im lo shifshev. That if a person didn't touch anything, and he just urinated, he didn't wipe anything, he didn't touch anything, and his hands remained completely uninvolved, then you don't have to wash your hands. Meaning, from the Gemara it sounds like, washing the hands is because the hands are coming in contact with things that are unclean. In a physical sense, not in a spiritual sense. That's what it seems from the Gemara. There is no Gemara that says, in a halachic context, that when one goes to the bathroom, they have to wash their hands afterwards. Now, obviously you do, because you have to be clean. But there's no Gemara that says that there's a halacha that you have to do that. So the implication of, if you just learn Shas, without opening up a Torah Beis Yosef, without opening up, certainly without opening up Mishnah Berurah, if you just learned Shas, the implication would be, why do we wash our hands when we go to the bathroom? After we go to the bathroom? Because our hands are probably dirty, and we want to kill any bacteria, we want to make sure that our hands are clean afterwards. However, there are a couple of places in Shas, the Bira Grub points out, that sort of say Derech Agav. It sort of just mentions in passing that people would wash their hands after using the bathroom. Not as a statement of halacha, but just a statement of fact. For example, in source number 5, the Gemara in Sukkah daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph, Tanoihi, Detanya, we have a brisa, Tfilin, Kolzman Shemenichon Mevarech Aleh, and Divrei Rabbi, V'chamer Omein Mevarech Aleh Shachris Bilvad. So it's machlokas, do you say a bracha and tefillin every time you put them on? Because every time you go to the bathroom, you have to take them off. Again, we're assuming in those days that they're wearing tefillin all day long. So they'd constantly be taking them off, putting them back on, every time they have to do something unclean, every time that... So they would take... So do you put it, say a new bracha each time you put them on? It's like the Kasha Tosa says in Bracha Siral, for Tosa says, why is it that, like, I have breakfast in the sukkah, I say a leisha b'sukkah. Then I go out and I come back and I have lunch, I say another leisha b'sukkah. I go out and come back and have dinner, I say another leisha b'sukkah. Yet, I wake up in the morning and I learn the daf, so I say a Birchas HaTorah. Then I go to work, and I come back late in the evening, and I'm Mavir Sedra a little bit, or I come to the shir or whatever, and I don't say another Birchas HaTorah, right? Well, why is it that, so it's not like there's one clear, easy rule about how often one says a Birchas HaMitzvah on a mitzvah that one does more than once a day. So for some reason, and Tosfos works on it a little bit, Birchas HaTorah carries you through the day, according to Rabbeinu Tam, even through the following night. Carries you till the next morning, that one Birchas HaTorah, which means according to Rabbeinu Tam, you wake up at 3 a.m. and you feel like, I just need a Daf Gemara. So, you know, it happens all the time. So you'd have to say a new Birchas HaTorah, you know what, it does happen though. I don't have that experience either much, but on the plane a lot of times, like you go to sleep and like you can't sleep and, you know, but you slept for like a couple of hours and it's still dark. So do you need to say a new Birchas HaTorah because like you're going to be up now? And so that Rabbeinu Tam would say no. But yet by sukkah, each time you go back. So the Gemara is just machlokas about tefillin. We don't have this issue with tefillin because we only put on tefillin once a day. But let's say you live in the old city and you're one of those people that wears tefillin all day, or at least wears tefillin again by mincha. So do you make a bracha each time? Itmar Abayi Amar Hilchsa Karevi Rav Amar Hilchsa Karabanan. So each one paskins how they paskin. Amar Rav Mari Brad Bas Shmuel. Is that a fascinating name, Rav Mari? What's his father's name? It doesn't say, right? Rav Mari Bra, the son of Bas Shmuel. He's the son of Shmuel's daughter. So I know who his grandfather is. I kind of know who his mother is. I know it's Rav Mari's mother and Shmuel's daughter. I have no idea who his father is. So he comes up a few places in Shas, and sometimes they give away his mother's name, Mari Bar Rachel. They never mentions his father's name. So Rashi writes that the story of how Rav Mari Brad Bas Shmuel came into the world is the most unfortunate story. There's a Gemara in the second paragraph of Ksuvos that talks about Shmuel's daughter being taken captive by non-Jews, and one of her captors impregnated her while she was in captivity, one of her non-Jewish captors. And the result of that pregnancy was this Rav Mari. So they're not going to use her father's name. He was later Megayer, whatever, but he was conceived Shalo Biktusha. He was conceived when his father was not Jewish. His father was holding his mother in captivity. So that's why we call him by the mother's name. You know, sometimes you learn through Gemaras and it's just, oh, Amar Rav Mari Brad Bas Shmuel, a name. You just think, name. People said. But sometimes you just got to pay attention to the name and see if there's something there. So over here, certainly something to learn from that name. So anyway, he said, Chazina Leila Rava. He said, I saw Rava. The law of it kishmaite didn't do what he paskined. He said that Allah is like the Rabbanan, that you only make the bracha shachris, you only make the bracha once a day. I saw, and look what he says, Elamakdim v'koyev ayel besakisei. He'd get up early, he'd go to the bathroom, v'nafik umashi yadei. He'd go out and he'd wash his hands. Is the point about washing hands? No, that's not the point at all. But umanach tefillin, and then he put on tefillin umavarech, and he'd make a bracha v'chiyisruch zimnachrina. And when he had to go to the bathroom a different time, ayel besakisei. Later that day, he went to the besakisei, v'nafik umashi yadei, umanach tefillin umavarech. And again, he washed his hands and put on tefillin with a bracha. So each time, it describes that he washed his hands. It doesn't say that there's a halacha that you have to wash your hands, but why would he include that? Meaning, if you're describing it, he doesn't really describe in great detail what he did while he was in there, right? Why would you describe what he does on the way out, that he washes, if it's purely about cleanliness, it's just about, of course, you wash your hands for cleanliness, why would you mention Mashi Yadeh? that he washed his hands. It wouldn't seem to bear mentioning. You have a similar Gemara in the first paragraph of Bab Kama, and Daf Yud Zayin. The Gemara tells us, Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Hava Azil Nabadid Rabbi Yochanan Mishal Shmaita. I was following Rabbi Yochanan around to ask him questions and learning. Ki Hava Ayla Beis Hakise Vava Bi'inim Inei Milsa. This must have been really annoying for Rabbi Yochanan. But when Rabbi Yochanan went into the bathroom, and I kept on shouting my shailas into the bathroom as he was in there, Lo Pashitlan Ad Demashiyade, he wouldn't answer until he washed his hands, Umanach Tefillin Umavarech, and put on Tefillin and said a bracha. Okay, etc. So, but the point is, again, washing his hands. Yeah? So in both instances, he's about to do Davar Shabakdusha. In the first Gemara, he was about to put on tefillin. And in the second Gemara, he was about to answer Shailas and Halacha. And put on tefillin, right. By all cases, he's about to put on tefillin, right. So in both instances, he's about to do Davar Shabakdusha. You know, and what are we about to do? It depends where we're going, exactly. So probably we would just wash anyway in the hopes that we're going to do something holy or good. Tefillin requires a gufnaki, but what does gufnaki mean? Gufnaki doesn't mean that your hands have to be cleansed of impurity. Gufnaki is machlokas, rishonim, exactly what gufnaki. It either means that you should have control of your physical faculties. So if a person has a bad stomach ache or something like that, it definitely means that. It may also mean, this is a gra, it may also mean cleanliness of mind. That a person is not having eschadas, not thinking about impure things, that gufnaki in that sense. That was the issue when a couple of years ago there was a principal in one of the modern Orthodox schools that allowed a girl to put on tefillin. So everyone had to give shiurim about why women shouldn't put on tefillin. Great. So it became a big scandal and it was all over the internet about what's so bad about it? You know, women do all sorts of mitzvot say shazman grama. Why shouldn't they be able to put on tefillin? So you know the term gufnaki was thrown around, and people were so offended. How can you say that a woman can't keep a gufnaki? Now, I don't know what they were assuming the words meant, but, you know, like, you think the man keeps a better gufnaki than the woman? Come on, if you're in a crowd of people and someone passes gas, it's the woman or the man? You know, come on, the man doesn't keep a better gufnaki than the woman. So I think I gave a share, but I must have mentioned something like that. And Dr. Jacob called me. She's a prominent OBGYN, and she's a really fantastic person. And she called me up and she said, how could you not mention why it's so obvious that women are unable to keep a gufnaki? I mean, there are just women have all sorts of secretions, all sorts of things that come out of their body that they have absolutely no control over it. She says, this is my business. I mean, this is like, you know, this is what I see all day. Like, how could anyone have a kasha on what gufnaki means in that context? But over here, I don't think the hands is necessarily related to a gufnaki. That story had nothing to do with anything. I just thought it was interesting. But so going back to why we wash after we leave the bathroom. So cleanliness, for sure. But if that's the only reason, soap and water, right? That's what you would do. Preparation for Asher Yatzar, okay, perhaps. Do we know exactly what the washing would have to be if it's a preparation for a bracha, for a Davar Shabakdusha? Do we wash our hands to prepare for other brachos? We say 100 of them each day. You know, exactly how to qualify that, also not pashut at all. Mishra Brura, as far as I know, is the first one who really... Well, he can't be the first one. I'm sure he's quoting someone. But it doesn't seem to appear in Rishonim this way, at least as far as I've seen. That brings up the issue of Ruach Ra in the bathroom. Ruach Ra is a concept that Rishonim use when you're sleeping, you wake up. Mishra Brura in source number... Which one? Mishra Brura in Sifkat Mem, source number 9. Vayotze mi beis hakisei, says the Mishra Brura, afilu lo asot tzrachav. Mishra Brura says, even if you didn't use the facilities, you just went into the bathroom for a second and came out. V'chein mi beis hamerchatz, or the bathhouse. Afilu lo rochatz sham, even if you didn't bathe there. Why? U'mishum ruach ra shashar beit lo amakomos. These places have ruach ra. Wow, so that has significant ramifications. First of all, it means that you may or may not need a kli to remove a ruach ra. I know in the morning when you wake up, you need a kli to remove a ruach ra. So how bad of a ruach ra is this? You could argue that it's bad enough to require a kli, but you have to sort of figure that out, whether it in fact is bad enough to require a kli. It also might mean that you need to wash three times, because when you wake up in the morning, ruach ra, you wash three times. So if there's really ruach ra, unless, again, you argue it's a less potent form of ruach ra. This would also mean that you can't touch food after leaving the bathroom until you've done the proper washing. Now, what does that mean? That means if one finishes relieving oneself, and then one washes in the bathroom, and then one leaves, they still have a ruach ra on their hands, because it's the place that has the ruach ra, which would mean a person is not allowed to touch food. You know, the signs in the restaurants that it's somewhat heartening and somewhat disheartening to see that it's necessary all employees must wash their hands before going back to work. So that wouldn't be enough. They wouldn't be allowed to touch food because they did the washing in the bathroom, not outside of the bathroom. If the Mishnah Berurah is correct about this idea of ruach ra, and also it would mean that if a person just walked in and didn't even he just walked in to get some medicine from the medicine cabinet, just walked in for to brush his teeth, it would also require a netilas yadayim. This is discussed by the contemporary achronim, whether just going in just for some other need other than actually using the bathroom, is discussed by the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Avad Yosef. They all talk about this issue. And Tzitz Eliezer, in source number 15, he writes, what if you stick your hands, in the second line, the stopik v'safik bazeh, bim hichnis yadav lebeis ha-kisei, it should be, so lebeis ha-kneses, so that's the typo, v'lo gufo, itzarech lital yadav. Do you need to wash your hands? If you just stick your hand in the bathroom, there's ruach ra in there. Now he's working with the assumption that if you stick your whole body in the bathroom, even if you didn't do anything, then you for sure would have to wash your hands. But he's saying, what if you just put your hand in the bathroom? He says it seems that the Marsham, when he quotes this discussion, is telling you that you don't have to wash your hands. And then he says, And what's it based on? So they talk about bia b'miktsas. You know, is it called that you went into the ruach ra? Is not something that, you know, if it was dirt, if it was filth, so your hands touch the filth, your hands will get dirty. But it's not filth; it's ruach ra. So it could be that you need to be in that place. It's about the place, and you're only considered in that place if rosh v'rubo, if your body is in that place. Or do we say bia b'miktsas shma bia? There's such a concept that something partially enters is considered, you know, there are people adayom that are makbid not to stick their fingers in between the cracks of the kotel. They I don't know if they take sticks to stick their notes in, or maybe they just don't write notes. But they won't stick their fingers in the cracks of the kotel because they're being choshesh for a lot. First of all, they're being choshesh that maybe right away on the other side of the Kotel, it already starts Kedushas Harabayas. And then there'd be Choshesh, not on the other side, that the external surface of the Kotel is the boundary of Kedushas Harabayas. And then there'd be Choshesh, that we all have a din of a Zav, and therefore we can't go on Harabayas, but that even Bia B'miktsas, even partially entering any part of my body into the harabais is going to be a problem, and that's why they won't stick their fingers. So, in a similar vein, you know, lahavdil, obviously, but in a similar vein, if you stick your hands in, it's a bia b'miktsas issue. But this whole discussion is not a discussion if you hold that there's no ruach ra, right? It's all because of ruach ra. The problem with this is that the Mishnah in Yuma didn't mention anything about ruach ra. And it's hard to imagine that, you know, ruach ra does seem to be associated with particular levels of uncleanliness. And it's just difficult to imagine that our bathrooms rise to that level. So what do the poskim actually say, lemaisa? The Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Zayin, Oz Gimel, says that if you're clean, your hands are clean, washing is a minhag. And he says, why? Preparation for Asher Yatzar. To be sure that you're maintaining levels of cleanliness, but it's a minhag. He won't call it a halacha. Which, again, when you read Shas, when you read the Gemara, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like for cleanliness entirely. He says there are some that are noeg to wash three times. I don't think it's necessary, but some are noeg. He doesn't even mention Ruach Ra, the Aruch HaShulchan, nor does he even mention a Kli. So according to the Aruch HaShulchan, three times, a nice chumrah. What do you have to do? Nothing really if your hands are clean, but you know, just make sure you're clean. That's basically what you have to do according to the Aruch HaShulchan. Yalkut Yosef, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, reporting what Rav Avadya Yosef held, and Rav Ben-Tzion Abba Shaul also, no need for a Kli. A Kli is when you're dealing with Ruach Ra, we don't really have Ruach Ra, it doesn't say it anywhere in Shas, against the Mishnah Berurah, because, you know, they're entitled. So, no need for a Kli. In fact, in Or Litzion, it says that when Rav Ben-Tzion Abba Shaul would use the yeshiva's bathroom, and there was a washing cup outside of the bathroom, he would dafka not use the washing cup, because he didn't want people to get the impression that you have to use a washing cup. Because there's no Ruach Ra, there's no need for a Kli. Dayan Weiss in Minchas Yitzchak in Cheleke, Simen Sadivav, says otherwise. He says it's not required. He also agrees that you don't necessarily need a Kli, but he says it's a worthwhile Chumrah. It's a reasonable Chumrah to have. And in fact, that's what the Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, the Chaznish would keep that Chumrah. So people say, so that's probably why it became very popular in yeshivas. In a lot of yeshivas, they try to do like the Chaznish a lot of times. So the Chaznish would keep this chumrah that he'd always wash with a kli after leaving the bathroom. But if you look in context, Rabbi Zavitovsky pointed out, he has an article on this, that if you look in the context of the other chumras it mentioned it along with, that the Chaznish had, the other ones aren't nearly as popular as this one. He mentioned how the Chaznish wouldn't look at pictures on Shabbos. He ate shalashubis on Yontif. He would require women who were in their ninth month of pregnancy to stay within walking distance of a hospital for Shabbos. You know, those aren't as popular as this one. So that was the grouping, sort of. Now, nevertheless, Rosh Shlomo Zalman in Halicha Shlomo does recommend using a kli, but also as a hidur, he doesn't say that it's required. So Rabbi Zavitovsky just points out that the one thing that doesn't make any sense is what I described in yeshivas, to have a kli in the bathroom. Meaning, because if you hold that there's a din of Ruach Ra, then it means that the Ruach Ra is not a din in what you do in the bathroom, it's not a din in what happens to your hands, it's a din in the room, that the room itself has a Ruach Ra. So washing your hands in that room is just, it's Tovah V'Sharet, it's Biyado. You're right away, you can have the Ruach Ra. It's going to come right back as soon as you finish washing. So that's the only minag that doesn't seem to make sense. So lahalacha, you have to wash to make sure your hands are clean after you leave the bathroom. A nice hidur, to wash three times. An even nicer chumrah, if you wanted to keep a chumrah, is to wash with a washing cup outside three times. Necessary la'alacha, very hard to say that would be necessary la'alacha, but a chumrah that many people seem to observe.